and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I am, of course, one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And we are back on a lovely Monday. I hope it's lovely anyways. We're recording this in the past. It is currently Easter today.
It is. And that's probably the only time we're going to talk about it.
Yep. Happy Easter for those who celebrate. If not, happy Sunday, normal Sunday for you.
Braves game is one out from being over, so we're not going to have anything to talk about with that this week either. So
I will say, though, man, I brought you a plate of food today.
You did. And oh, buddy. All right. So your family, all very good cooks.
Oh, of course.
I'm eyeing this plate. I'm waiting for these recordings to be over and for you to leave, so it's just me and that plate later.
We will spare the misophonia people. We'll spare you the munching and the chewing and the mic.
We'll spare everyone the munching and the chewing and the mic.
But it's good. We got barbecue brisket. We got barbecue chicken. We got some baked beans. We got rolls. There's some
cornbread.
There's some mac and cheese in there. It is just a classic. A classic barbecue plate.
Love it.
And then a whole litany of pies.
And cobblers.
And there's so my mom made a strawberry cobbler. She'd made a lemon ice chest pie, ice box pie. I don't know. This was a new one for her. It was good.
Melted by the time it got here.
Melted a little bit, yeah. Her famous, famous at least to me, chocolate pie. And then there's a key lime pie that was bought from Publix.
As is expected for any Southern gathering, someone brings something from Publix inevitably.
Hey, I'm not going to kick it out for eating. No. I'm not going to kick it out of bed for eating crackers.
Certainly not.
It's a good pie. So, yes, enjoy that. Because it was a hell of a good lunch today.
Yeah, it looks like a great one.
Well, I am on the verge of falling asleep, I feel like, because I've had a day already. We are recording this later in the day than we normally do because of the aforementioned family lunch. And I am so full, and your couch is very comfortable. So I feel like if we don't get through these minutes, I'm going to just fall asleep.
It's nice and cool and dark in this room too, so it's perfect sleeping.
Yes. So what do you say we get into it, and let's talk about minute 30 through 31. We didn't mention this on Friday of last week, but we've made it through 30 minutes of this movie.
We have now made it through 30 minutes.
We have now made it through 30 minutes of this movie.
Congratulations.
Congrats to you.
And we're going to have a milestone, I think, next week too.
Ooh, yes, we will, but that is for next week.
Yeah.
So, where'd we leave off? We left off mid-conversation with Stilgar and Paul.
Yep.
Paul was about to go out into the desert for his little walkabout, and Stilgar was...
Across the Urg.
Across the Urg is what he said, yep. And Stilgar was in the process of warning him about all the things that he could encounter.
Besides the worms.
Besides the worms. So he gets the worms out first. And we pick right back up in mid-sentence as he says, and the Harkonnens, so besides the worm and the Harkonnens, beware of the trapdoor spiders, which is a legit warning. I hate spiders. Do not like them. So, yeah.
They're our friends, Zach.
I don't kill them. I just don't like them.
All right.
I know they serve a wonderful purpose. A
very important purpose. Yes. In local ecologies. So
I usher them out the door gently if I find them in my place.
All right.
So besides the worms, the Harkonnens, the trapdoor spiders, he says centipedes are very nasty. Not the big ones.
They're harmless.
They're harmless, but the small ones.
And he places his hands about 2.5 feet apart from each other.
I love that. It's such a good like little sight gag. It's so fucking funny.
The look that he gives too, and he's like, the little ones. And he's got like both of his eyebrows raised up and everything.
And he's talking about centipedes.
Yeah.
100 legs.
Yep. Yep.
100
You're
legs.
Right. You're right, because
millipedes is 1,000 legs. Yep. Got it.
Yep.
Do you know the biggest centipede on Earth?
No, but if I had to take a guess, it's probably somewhere in Southeast Asia.
Incorrect.
Okay. South America?
Correct.
All right. If I had to guess, it's probably about 2.5 feet long.
Incorrect.
All right.
12 inches.
Oh, okay.
Up to 12 inches in length. It is the Scolopendra gigantea, a.k.a. the Peruvian giant yellow leg centipede.
Ah, cool.
Which can exceed 30
which 30 can, meters.
which can exceed 30 centimeters or 12 inches. So I guess it could be up to 2.5 feet, but usually exceeds 12 inches, 30 centimeters in length. This species is found in various parts of South America and preys on a wide range of animals, including small vertebrates and large arthropods.
You believe it.
So, fuck that. Do not enjoy. I have dreams of going to Peru one day, and I fear running into one of those.
I've never been stung by a centipede. I've heard that centipede stings are horrible in terms of, like, pain scale. So, have fun.
I've been stung by a caterpillar before. One of the spiky
ones.
One
of those, like, hairy ones? Or
spiky ones.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was legit. Like, we were clearing some brush on the property that I grew up in, and one was on a branch. And
grabbed it.
It got me on the wrist.
Yeah.
And, was very painful. Not fun at all. Yay. We had to call poison control because we didn't know what the fuck it was.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Do not enjoy that. Thankfully, we do not have, you know, 2.5 feet.
Little ones.
Little ones, yes. I wonder why the little ones are the ones you got to watch out for where the big ones aren't.
I wonder if it's like a poison dart frog situation where, like, the tinier it is, the more, like, dangerous it is because it has to compensate for more predators or whatever.
Fair. I'm also thinking, like, the Portuguese man of war jellyfish. Real tiny ones, but super poisonous.
Portuguese man of wars can get fucking big. You're thinking of the blue ring octopus.
Maybe. The little tiny ones. Yeah, okay.
Super tiny octopi. I am.
You're right.
That people are like, oh, look at these. They're really cute. And then they, like, touch it and die.
Yes.
Basically, immediately.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair. But still, 2.5 feet is huge for a centipede.
But when you take into consideration, Shai-Hulud can grow, what, 450 meters long or some shit like that?
Fair enough, yes.
Small by comparison.
So, Paul's got to watch out for these things. But this is not the only thing that Stilgar says that he has to watch out for. Stilgar gets all ominous in this moment and tells Paul to never listen to the djinn. And that is spelled J-I-N-N, according to the subtitles.
Yep.
Alternate spelling D-J-I-N-N, if you want to spell it that way. What do you know about djinns?
My understanding is that the spellings are interchangeable. It's just like a matter of where you're from in terms of...
Yeah.
Well, so djinn are a thing that humans in our own world have, you know, kind of come up with as a mythological creature. Mm-hmm. Pre-Islamic Arabia. They are not necessarily evil creatures. They're not necessarily good creatures. They're more just kind of like, in my very, like, basic understanding of them, is they're kind of like forces of nature that just kind of, like, fuck with you a little bit.
Yeah.
Not unlike nymphs from Greek mythology, mm-hmm. or, you know, they kind of have their own agendas, per se.
Yeah. They're little mischievous little spirits.
Yeah. They're just kind of there doing their own thing.
Yeah.
I know in Dune, a little similar, they can be a little more antagonistic.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how far down the Dune djinn rabbit hole you got, but in the Dune Encyclopedia, there's a very interesting story about how Muad'Dib gained his name Muad'Dib.
Okay.
By confronting, I'm going to fucking butcher this, Merid Alhin, Naib of all the djinn. And that comes from Ibrahim al-Yazi's Fremen folk tales from Oun.
Okay.
And I'm not going to read it because it's a very long story, but get yourself a copy of the Dune Encyclopedia. Read it. It's under, I think, Paul Atreides, like, main, or one of his main entries. It's a fun little, you know, tall tale
of, I was about to say
of
this.
Paul helping, coming across, like, this giant sand castle that he enters, and being, you know, presented with a plate of, I think it's either dates or apricots or whatever.
Okay.
And he eats them, and then, like, this djinn, Marid Alhen, shows up and is like, "You ate my food, now I have to eat you." And he throws Paul in, like, a pit, and there's a little Muad'Dib mouse in there that he, you know, helps out.
Yeah.
And then the mouse, before it leaves, turns and says, you know, "This good deed will return, you know, to you," or whatever. Paul then confronts, like, four or five other djinn that work for Marid.
Okay.
And then, like, it's a ultimately a story of, like, Paul's trickery in outwitting all of the djinn.
Gotcha. Okay. Interesting. I don't remember reading this passage, but that's really cool. I'll have to go back in and read it tonight.
It's pretty cool. Go check it out from the Dune Encyclopedia. If you just search djinn, there's, like, only 17 entries in the encyclopedia for it.
All from the story, pretty much.
Mostly. Okay. There's another entry, and we're going to go into, you know, Dune Messiah stuff here, but it's, like, talking about how Paul's Muad'Dib's inspiration for the palace in Arrakeen that he built was inspired by, once again, Dune Encyclopedia doing its own weird shit, was inspired by the Temple of Jerusalem and how Solomon was able to control djinn. So there was a question of, did Muad'Dib have the same control over, you know, these supernatural entities and direct the djinn to make this palace for him? It gets weird.
Sure. But, you know, 3,500 years of storytelling and just, you know, word of mouth legends passing down.
Well, I mean,
that'll do that.
That's the other thing, too, with messianic, you know, figures, is that people tend to over exaggerate little bit.
Yeah, you make them larger than life.
Exactly. So, yeah. All of that to say,
well, cool.
There's some cool stuff in the Dune Encyclopedia about the djinn.
So Stilgar does not think they're very cool, unfortunately.
No.
He is saying, you know, do not listen to them. They whisper at night and they can possess you, and that they are demons.
Yeah.
And then he tries to do, like, a
ooga booga. I love.
He does an ooga booga at Paul. And
I'm pretty sure the first time we saw that in the theater together, I audibly laughed at that.
Understandable. And then he chuckles himself. He knows he's, you know, he's being silly. But as soon as he gets done, you know, acknowledging his silliness, he says, "No, but for real, they're demons." He says, "But it's true. Don't listen to them." So he clearly believes that they exist.
Yeah.
Whether or not they are as spooky as he's making it out to be, I think that is up for debate.
Well, we'll have to see.
We'll have to see. Yeah. Paul is looking not convinced here.
Paul's like, "All right, old man."
Yeah. This is clearly like a ghost story. He's trying to scare me.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit about this. I'm not listening to this. I'm listening to it, but I'm not believing it.
It's kind of like when, I don't know if your older brothers or if you had uncles that, like, told you stories of, like, shit in the woods or whatever.
Oh, yes.
But you could definitely tell that they were, like, bullshitting as you got a little older and everything.
Yes, there was a few of those. As you remember, I grew up a mile into the woods from the main road. So we were in the middle of the woods, and there were plenty of those stories passed around between my older brothers and family members and stuff like that. So, yeah, I get it. Never believed them, but always terrified me.
Yeah. Well, little five-year-old Zach probably had some fear instilled in him somehow.
I still get uneasy being in the woods.
Being in the woods alone
is
always a weird feeling.
But it's also, like, it's weirdly comforting to me, but it's also unsettling.
It depends on where you are and what time it is.
Sure.
So one of the things that I love about, and we are not in this, you know, cultural band, but all of the stories you hear coming out of Appalachia and everything from the residents there and everything, and how they have their own entire subculture of all these tall tales and everything.
Yeah.
I love that shit. I think it's super cool.
It's, that is old lore.
Yeah.
And because those mountains are super old.
Those mountains are older than just about everything else on Earth.
They found caves that do not have microbial life or evidence of microbial life there.
Yeah.
Because those caves existed before cellular organisms did.
Those caves existed before the sharks did.
Yes.
Before trees did. Like,
yeah, they're old. The only reason they aren't as tall as the Rockies is because they're millions and billions of years old.
Billions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got some old ass mountains, man. And hell, they've never really been underwater, which is the interesting part.
Yeah.
Like, if you can trace those back to, or they have traced those back to, like, Pangaea and, like, the early land masses.
Well, there's the thing about how the Appalachians were connected to the Scottish Highlands, which were connected to the fjords of Norway and Sweden and stuff like that.
It's all the same range.
It's really cool.
Great stuff.
Plate tectonics on the Dune Minute podcast.
Yeah, fun stuff. Okay, back to Dune. We cut from Paul, not really believing Stilgar, over to Shishkali, looking worried. I thought she looked a little bit worried. Concerned, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
She's looking back at Stilgar and Paul as they're talking. And I don't. Did you ever notice the diamond tattoo on her chin?
I think this is the first time that we get a good look at it, because the only other time that we've had, well, no, that's not true, because we had Shishkali out in the full-on daylight last week when there was the argument about how the Mahdi must be Fremen.
Yeah, but not a good close-up of her face.
No, but still enough of her face, like, in frame. Point is that this is, I think, the first time that we get a good look at her.
Yeah. It almost looked like a Sook school diamond tattoo, but on her chin.
But on her chin, and yeah, it was open.
Yeah, it was hollow, not filled in.
Yeah.
And you would know a lot about that, as today you got your tattoos filled
in. Not true. I got them filled in yesterday. Thank you
very
much.
Sorry. Yesterday you got some tattoos filled in. They look really good, man.
Thank you. It stings right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I just I noticed that, and I couldn't draw any significance to them.
The significance that I draw to them is that whoever did the, you know, costume designs probably said, hey, that'll look cool.
Well, my reaching headcanon was maybe she had some kind of, like, medicine or medicinal training.
I don't think that's medical necessarily.
Training. I know it's not, but it's like maybe that's some kind of parallel. Probably not. That's really reaching.
I think it's just a matter that of so many human cultures have developed their own reasonings for tattooing in our past and surely into the future. So that's just why they have it.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's very reminiscent of the Dune miniseries Fremen, because, like, Stilgar has a weird eyebrow tattoo thing, and a lot of other Fremen in the sci-fi miniseries all have tattoos on their faces.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, I'm just trying to look for connections wherever I can.
I think you might be trying a little too hard.
Well, where else can we do this?
Yeah, true. Minute by minute.
So
the curtains are blue, Zach.
Sometimes the curtains are just fucking blue. So she is speaking to Chani in Chikopsa.
Chani is speaking to her this
Yes,
minute.
Sorry. Chani is speaking to her in Chikopsa.
And Chani is off screen. We're solely looking at Shishkali.
But we get subtitles now. This is one of the rare occurrences up until this point where we get subtitles for the Chikopsa. Mm-hmm. And I think it would become a lot more common going forward. Chani says, he doesn't know how to cross. Stilgar is going to get him killed. What is he trying to prove? And Shishkali replies, what do you think?
That's our minute.
And that is our minute. So we're kind of left mid-conversation with the two of them. I have nothing from the books because, again, this scene and Paul's crossing doesn't necessarily happen like this. I'll talk more later in the week about kind of the what they're proving here, which does happen in the books. But this particular, like, oh, you have to walk across this Urk doesn't exist.
I have some more stuff from the Dune Encyclopedia.
Let's do it.
So, the Dune Encyclopedia doesn't make any mention of trapdoor spiders, but it certainly makes mention of some of the other fauna, centipedes included, all introduced to Arrakis by Dr. Liet Kynes.
That makes sense.
Yep. There were also desert owls that were introduced by Liet Kynes, which we don't see here. All coming from the Dune Encyclopedia, though, so... I think this was probably just a part of Kynes' way of trying to develop an ecology on this planet and,
oh yeah,
you know,
I mean, that's what steer they were there towards for.
The green Arrakis that there are the dreams of. So,
okay. We don't get to see a whole lot of the other, I don't know, like native animal life, animal or insect life on Dune.
We'll get a little bit.
Very few.
Later.
Yeah, very, very few. So cool. All right, so we get mentions of centipedes, giant killer centipedes. Watch out for the small ones. Watch out for
the small ones. Hold your arms about 2.5 feet apart from each other.
You ever, I don't know if your home gets these. Mine occasionally does, but those little like silver...
Silverfish?
Silverfish, yeah.
Not the house that I live in now. Previous apartments and my home in Florida where I grew up, I think it's in more like damp areas that they like to hang out, but fair. Yeah.
Have you ever seen one of those fuckers that reaches maturity? I'm talking...
No, I've only always seen them like when they're, you know, tiny, like an inch or two long.
One of them, I guess, evaded me a couple of months ago, and I've
evaded you and Soul?
Well, Soul doesn't give a shit. Right, he's a terrible hunter. He just looks at things and lets them be. this thing was probably 2.5 to 3 inches long. And had fully developed legs and antenna and everything.
Yeah.
And it scared the ever-loving shit out of me. I don't like creepy crawly insects. They freak me out.
All right. Good to know.
They freak me out. Again, I don't kill them. I generally usher them outside. Silverfish, I don't think serve a very important purpose, so I did kill this one.
I don't know what their
purpose is. I don't know. Anyways, gross. So I'm thinking of a centipede that I know in my head.
And yeah, but now you can go to bed tonight thinking about a silverfish crawling its way into your ear.
So you can find us on social media. We are on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com. We are on, we have an email address, DuneMinute@gmail.com, if you'd like to reach out to us that way. I am going to go have nightmares now, and we will see y'all tomorrow for another episode of the Dune Minute podcast.
Sweet dreams, Zach.
See ya.